Drive Time on RT Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Create a brighter future for your employees with Zurich Corporate Pensions. Trust excellence. Visit zurichcorporate.ie to learn more.
Drive Time on RT Radio 1 with Sarah McInerney and Cormac O'Hara.
As you heard in the news headlines, the Black Sea grain deal between Ukraine and Russia has been extended for two more months. Turkish President Tayyip Erdogan revealed the news in a speech to officials of his ruling party, AK Party, came after the last ship left a Ukrainian port under the deal, which allows Ukrainian ships to export grain and fertilizers from their Black Sea ports, and that was due to expire tomorrow. Russia's foreign ministry says the Kremlin will comment on the extension of the deal later. Well, on the line now with more and all of this is BBC's Ukraine correspondent James Waterhouse. And James, it's good to speak to you this evening. The current extension to the grain deal, as I said, due to expire tomorrow. Is there an indication that agreement can be reached to allow it to continue?
Well, I'll be honest with you, it's extended by a couple of months each time, and we are coming up to the year mark since this deal was agreed last summer, and it's the most amount of doubt I've seen cast around its very extension. Russia has long been saying there is not enough in it for us because it is unable to export its own agricultural produce and fertilizers and hardware. Why? Well, it's not to do with the deal itself, but it's to do with other sanctions which are preventing Russia from using ships, getting insurance, docking them in other countries. So Russia has been becoming increasingly vocal about that. But in the words, it hasn't said much, as you'd say, but it has said, look, we are still hopeful our problems can be addressed. And I think Ukraine will be breathing a sigh of relief because while it is exporting a third less grain than what it was before the full-scale invasion, it is still able to shift. It's shifted around 30 million tons so far. But what Kyiv complains about are Russian inspectors in Turkey at the edge of the Black Sea slowing the process down because part of the deal allows them to inspect grain ships coming back and forth. And at the moment, Ukraine is claiming that there are 70 ships jammed up. So this is not without issue, but the only major diplomatic breakthrough in this conflict continues to hold.
Russia had said it was going to withdraw if there weren't changes to sanctions on its agricultural industry. They wanted the West to remove obstacles to the export of Russian grain and fertilizer, including the reconnection of the Russian Agricultural Bank to the SWIFT payment system. How likely is it that some or even any of those demands are going to be met?
It's extremely unlikely because in what has been a moment of Western rarity, Russia's full-scale invasion in February last year caused an unprecedented amount of unity from Western allies in that the European Union, the US seem to be on the same page in upholding the sanctions imposed that have gradually been brought in over the past 15 months or so. I think if the West was to put those measures into reverse in any way, that would directly, in the eyes of Ukraine, incentivize Russia's continued assault on this country. So I don't think that is likely. And Russia has complained before. I remember at the end of last year, it was making the same complaints. But I think in a hint of the power dynamic in this deal, it is a deal brokered by the United Nations and Turkey. Russia, for the second time now, has been either convinced to fall back in line or gently pulled back into line.
Okay, so that is a small bit of good news, I suppose. I want to ask you about Bakhmut because the battle for the control of Bakhmut still ongoing in the east of Ukraine. It's been ongoing for months and months now. Ukraine say they've reclaimed a significant amount of ground there. We saw a counteroffensive take place over the last couple of days. What do we know at this stage?
Well, they're using the term significant amount of territory. But to quantify that for you, today we're hearing from the Defence Ministry that we're talking about 500 metres, which gives you an idea of just how attritional the fighting has become. Now, we are in the midst of the counter-offensive narrative, where there are hopes from the West and Ukraine of a much-anticipated counter-attack against Russian troops. So there is a lot of willing for that to happen. So when there are counteroffensives like this, there is a lot of excitement. But at the moment, I think we are seeing Ukrainian forces continue to test different parts of the front line to keep Russia guessing. And I think what's the most telling about Bakhmut is that in the center of the city, you have predominantly Wagner mercenary fighters, which have been doing the bulk of Moscow's fighting in that area. And on the outskirts of the city, you have Russia's regular army, which is trying to hold the line. And it seems Ukrainian forces are making progress on the outskirts of the city, but they're doing so in relatively small numbers, which feeds into the theory that the reason Ukraine hasn't made a tactical retreat is because in their eyes, they are inflicting an acceptable number of Russian casualties versus their own. And when you're planning a counteroffensive, it's about pulling in as much of the enemy as possible while possibly striking elsewhere.
How much does what happens in Bakhmut matter at this point, James? As I say, we've been talking about it for months and different claims at different points over the last couple of months that, you know, Russia had seized it or that Ukraine was fighting back. How important is Bakhmut in the entire war?
Well, I was there in January, and I say this every time. I cannot believe we're still talking about it being under predominantly Ukrainian control. Back in January, there was no real strategic significance to it. Yes, there were fears that Russia could push through to other cities like Kramatorsk, for example. But it's not clear whether that would actually happen. But because it's been talked about so much, because it's been weaponized in the information war, because Ukraine seems to have made it a line in the soil, it has become somewhat strategically significant. Because what Ukraine is clearly trying to do is make Bakhmut the turning point, the moment Russia was unable to push forward anymore. I don't think it shapes dramatically the front line in other ways. I don't think it influences a counteroffensive drastically, but it does draw Russian forces. Russia still is the bigger force. So when Ukraine is, you know, continually the underdog, it has to outmaneuver its bigger enemy, and Bakhmut is a part of that.
I just ask you finally then about airstrikes in Kyiv and an increase in airstrikes across Ukraine in recent days, Kyiv included, and claims of major weapon destruction on both sides.
Yes, it's interesting, this one. This has been a week where, even by airstrike standards, it's been particularly choppy in the capital. Two nights ago, the rumble of air defences was quite something. It was like a bizarre fireworks display, and the windows rattled in a way that I hadn't experienced since the initial invasion itself. And what Ukraine is claiming is that it's saying there was an unprecedented density of strikes from the Russians, in that they used a variety of missiles, and notably ballistic missiles. These are missiles that travel incredibly fast and incredibly high. And until now, the thinking was they're undetectable by air defense systems. The siren won't go off, and they could just land before it's too late. And Ukraine is now claiming to have shot down several of these missiles through its air defense systems. It's not clear whether that is the case or not. It's incredibly difficult to verify. In turn, Russia is saying, we've destroyed the Patriot US air defense systems which have been provided to Ukraine, which the West has claimed was impossible. Ukraine has denied this. And again, it's very difficult for us to verify. But it shows Russia is renewing its strikes from the sky.
Very interesting to speak to you, and thank you again for joining us. That's James Waterhouse, BBC's Ukraine correspondent.